I think we're ready to get started. Hi everyone, welcome to Converting Java Applications to .NET. No? All right. Hi, I'm Chris Reisner. This is Brian Benz.
Hey.
We're both technical evangelists. Brian works at MS OpenTech and I work at Microsoft. We're technically two separate companies, but we kind of work towards the same sort of goals. And today we're actually here to talk about running Java and Oracle applications on Azure, so hopefully that is actually what you came for. So just kind of an agenda of what we're going to talk about. The first thing we're going to answer is, you know, why are we talking about Java? Why is it part of Microsoft Azure? We'll then talk about some of the hosting options that are part of, or that you have with Java on Azure. And hint, hint, we'll probably be talking about virtual machines and then cloud services and tooling. And at the end, we'll have time for questions. So, you know, this is a big .NET conference being that it's build, but the thing with Java is that it is still really heavily used, both inside and outside the enterprise. If you're familiar with GitHub, which is a very popular source repository and version kind of website that people use, they release statistics every year that talk about, that you know, basically say these are the amount of projects that are created in each language. Well, over the past few years, Java's actually been in the top three every year. So, you know, even not even just in this closed-off enterprise, just even in the outside world, Java's really still very popular. And one of the reasons it is that Java is very cross-platform. You know, it can run on Windows, it can run on Linux, it can run on phones, it runs in lots of places. In fact, Satya mentioned, I think, last week that 20% of hosting in Azure is actually accountable for Linux, which oftentimes it is going to be running Java. So as far as Java hosting in Azure, we've got virtual machines and we've got cloud services. Now, as far as virtual machines go, there's a lot of different options there. We've got a partnership with Oracle, which I'm going to talk more about, but included in that, we've got actual virtual machines for Oracle WebLogic, Oracle Database, and Oracle Linux. And then we've also got Windows and Linux, where you could set up your own Java instances however you want. So if you, you know, you're used to having JBoss running at home, it's relatively easy to, you know, put the same JBoss on either a Linux or a Windows server inside Microsoft Azure. And then, like I said, cloud services, which is something we'll talk more about as we go on. So just to remind everyone, if you're not already, you know, intimately familiar with how cloud computing and, you know, Azure works, get a little diagram here. And basically what you see right now is packaged software. So this is where you've got your own data center and you do everything. You figure out the actual server hardware, you run the network wires, the power cords, you handle the operating systems and any sort of virtualization, you build the apps, you know, you're really doing absolutely everything. And, you know, with the advent of the cloud, this is kind of a, maybe this isn't such a great idea because you really have to do all of this work. So now they've got a lot more options when it comes to the cloud. So the first one we're going to talk about is infrastructure as a service. And that's, you know, virtual machines, really. And what that does is it takes away the hardware aspect. You don't have to worry about the servers and the wiring. And in most cloud instances, you really don't have to worry about virtualization either. You really rarely ever would get just an operating system running on top of a server and then, you know, just go do your own thing. It's usually a virtualized server running on that hardware. And then, you know, you handle everything up, including the middleware, so, what, you know, maybe the Java server, all the way up to the application you're going to build. Next to that, we've got platform as a service, and that basically takes away the operating system level for you. So you don't have to worry about operating system patching, updates, issues along those lines, as well as anything below that. Now, what's interesting about platform as a service and Java with Azure is that you still control the middleware element. So you still control what Java server you're running. And Brian's going to get more into that when we talk about PaaS. The last thing there is software as a service. And that's not necessarily a way that you would run Java in Azure, but it's a pre-built set of services that Microsoft Azure provides that you can take advantage of from Java, whether it's running in Microsoft Azure or on your own premise or your own computer. So the first thing we'll talk about is IaaS. And again, IaaS is virtual machines. There we go. Microsoft Azure has really easy ways to create Windows and Linux VMs. Due to the partnership with Oracle, you can also use the official Oracle JDK, which is version 6 and 7. We've got pre-configured VMs, which we're going to look at, which means that it's really very, very simple to set up and spin up your own VM. So about a year ago, I think, we announced a partnership with Oracle. And basically what we were working towards was making Microsoft Azure the first official cloud platform that has licensed and approved usage of Oracle's Java. And what that means is that you're basically legitimately licensed and supported to run Java inside of Azure. One of the great features of that is license mobility. So if you are currently running Oracle Java in your own data centers, you can take that same license you're using and port it right into Microsoft Azure. In addition to that, Oracle offers Oracle Linux as well if you're running Oracle Linux. The VMs that we have are primarily going to be Windows Server VMs with all this Oracle software built on top. Now, as of, I think, mid-March of last month, all of the Oracle VMs or, Java on Azure basically went generally available. And what that means is that you are, approved for production use, you're approved by Oracle, everything is fine, you can use Java on Azure in these VMs. So right here we've got the VM gallery, which we'll take a closer look at in a minute, but this is basically what you need to do, how easy it is to spin up a VM. You go in here, you find which one you want to spin up, and then you set up some minimal configuration stuff, and then all you have to do from there is put your applications onto these VMs, and whatever rather, minute configuration you might need. Now, these are all the current Java and Oracle VM images we've got, and we'll see more of these in just a minute as we actually go into the VM gallery. And the last thing I'm going to do before I actually kind of go into, two things, but in addition to all the Windows Server and the Oracle stuff, we've also got a ton of different Linux options that are running inside of Microsoft Azure. So there's SUSE, there's Ubuntu, what am I forgetting?
OpenSUSE, CentOS, and also Oracle.
Right.
Recently.
So if you're already running Java on any sort of Linux distro like that, really easy to spin up these distros inside of Microsoft Azure and port your Java right into Azure.
One of the surprising things, just so you guys know, Satya mentioned this already, but 20% of our images on Windows Azure run on Linux.
Right. So really quick, we'll talk about the licensing, because I mentioned there's license portability. Now, that isn't across the board, it's always the same. There's kind of specific situations in which you can bring your own license. So you can bring your own license and build a VM, which can be on Windows, you build your own VM on Windows Server or Oracle Linux. There's also gallery options for pre-built VMs you can use. And there's Oracle Linux or Windows Server. So with Oracle Linux, you bring your own license and you configure Oracle Linux. Once you get down to Windows Server, though, what happens there is that when you spin up a Windows Server instance running one of the Oracle options, you basically get a VM a license with it, so it's all built into the pricing. So if you're not already licensed with Oracle, you don't have to worry about that when you get a Windows Server image. It's going to be in basically packaged for you. So let's go ahead and take a quick look at actually spinning up an Oracle VM. So here I am. I'm in the Microsoft Azure portal here, and I'm looking at virtual machines. Now, like I said before, it's going to be really simple to spin up a new VM. I'll just go to New. I'll go to From Gallery. And right now, I've got my VM gallery. Tons of options here, whether you're doing, Windows Server, .NET hosting, or Linux, or down here, we've got Oracle. Oh, it looks like they put Puppet, which is new. So here we've got Oracle, and inside here we've got, the JDK 7, JDK 6. We've got tons of different instances of Oracle WebLogic and Oracle Database, whether it's Enterprise Edition or Standard Edition, all running on Windows Server. If you go down a little bit further, we see that we've got Oracle Linux, and then we've got pre-configured WebLogic Database, two different kinds of database, all running on Oracle Linux. So really easy, all you have to do is kind of pick which one you want. So I'll go ahead and I'll just choose WebLogic. It's going to give me some information here and link down to what the pricing includes. So we'll go to the next. The next step is just to name our VM. So we'll just call this my build Oracle VM. We can choose whether we're in the standard or the basic tier, and we can choose basically the size and the memory we might need. I don't really need a lot, so I'm just going to choose A0, a shared core, it's small. And then I'll just enter my username and password. So I'll say Oracle VM or admin. And I'll enter my super secret password 123.
These guys are going to log on and check that out now.
So then we go to the next page in the wizard. And the next page is saying, you know, we need to create a cloud service. And the reason we do that is the cloud service is kind of the entryway into your VM. So I'm just going to go ahead and say I want to create a new cloud service. Or if I wanted to, I could choose an existing one I've got. It's going to give me a default name, but I can change that. And then it's going to choose where I want to put that throughout the world. The next step is to create a storage account. And basically what happens is when you create a VM in Azure, it uses a storage account almost like the physical hard drive so that it's a little bit easier to reproduce those VPMs in case anything happens. Because again, these are all virtualized servers. So I'll just go ahead and create one automatically. And then down here, I've got the option to create an availability set. And what an availability set is let's say you've got one VM and it's sitting in a rack, right? If something were to happen to that rack, like let's say that rack catastrophically failed, like there was an issue with the power cord, something like that, that VM would go down. When you create an availability set, it basically says, I'm going to have this VM in this rack and some rack over there. So basically, if there's ever an issue, it's going to make sure your VM does not go down. I'll just leave it as is for now and live dangerously. And lastly, down here, I've got endpoints. So by default, it's going to make sure I've got remote desktop and PowerShell set up so that as soon as my VM starts, I can PowerShell into it, I can remote desktop into it, and I can start doing things. So the next step is I'm just going to hit the next button. It's going to ask me if I want to install the VM agent. The VM agent is basically there. So let's say I forget my password. There's the tool I can use in the VM agent to say, hey, send me my password. If you don't install the VM agent, you would be in a little bit of trouble if you ever forgot that. And then we've got some new stuff here about Puppet and Chef, which just showed up in the portal today, and I can't really talk about. So we'll click the last check mark, and it's going to go off and create my VM. Now, we won't sit here and wait, because it will take a minute or two to set up. But once that VM is set up, I can RDP into it, I can PowerShell into it, I can start installing my Java application and running whatever it is that I want to do in Java. And then afterwards, I can go in here, and I can basically take that VM, I can make my own image out of it, and I can really, really easily reproduce this VM, so if I want to scale this out worldwide, it becomes a very, very easy thing to do.
For the Puppet and Chef stuff, check out the Scott Gu keynote tomorrow morning,
I believe,
8:30. So he's going to be talking a little bit more about that.
Yes. So just to kind of recap some of the Oracle stuff I just mentioned, full support for Oracle software in Microsoft Azure and in Hyper-V and Windows Server. You've got licensed mobility, so if you're already running stuff on Oracle, you can easily take it and run it in Microsoft Azure. There's also images that include Oracle licenses for running on Windows Server. And what you know, what's really important here is that it really is production approved, and it's ready for you to use and go live with right now. So now I'm going to hand it off to Brian, who's going to talk a little bit more about platforms as a service.
Hi. So just a little bit of introduction. So I'm an evangelist for Microsoft Open Technologies. We're a subsidiary of Microsoft. And we work on enabling open source for Windows Azure and for devices. And some of the things we've done are on the PaaS side of things. We've worked with Azul, which is the company who creates OpenJDK. They've created a Windows and Windows Azure specific optimized version of their OpenJDK called Zulu. That's available in the gallery, and I'll show you some examples of where you can find that and how you can work with it a little bit later. also, you can bring any VM to PaaS. We have PaaS services that they manage your OS, as Chris pointed out, and you manage your own web app server like Tomcat and JDKs for your apps. Also, I'm going to show you an Eclipse plugin that we've developed for allowing you to build and test things locally using emulation for compute and for storage that allows you to test that within an Eclipse client. How many people are Eclipse users here? Okay, about half, that's good, okay. So I'm gonna show you that, and it also allows you to easily deploy things to Windows Azure PaaS. So as I mentioned, for cloud service offerings, we have PaaS, web and worker roles. How many people understand the difference between a web and a worker role in Windows Azure? Okay, just so everyone knows, so web role is what you know as a website. You have IIS running. You have applications that are able to access IIS and interact with the web through that. A worker role is everything that a web role is minus the web server. So you actually have, in this case, when we're working with Java on PaaS, you generally want to work with a worker role. So you want to have a PaaS worker role. And the reason why you do that is because you want to have Tomcat as your app server. So the Tomcat's going to interact with the web instead of IIS on the front end. Worker roles, as I mentioned, can host Java. And we have Eclipse tooling that allows you to work with testing and deploying apps straight from Eclipse into Windows Azure. And of course, we have OpenJDK, or you can bring your own JDK as well through VM or PaaS. So the Eclipse tooling, it's allows you to test with an emulator. It has SSL support. It has support for session persistence, what we call sticky sessions. And you can configure roles. So you can set up multiple instances. You can set up different sizes for each instance. You can set up specific custom endpoints, and you can name those endpoints. We also have self-signed certs for testing and publishing to Azure. One of the things I wanted to show you, how many people are familiar with VM Depot? Just a couple, good, all right. So we've got this facility here, VM Depot. If you go to vmdepot.msopentech.com, we actually have, we just reached 1,000 images. These are all Linux images that run on Windows Azure via Hyper-V. They've been created by third parties, and you can download them and implement them in VMs for free. So if you want Alfresco running on Ubuntu, that's a good example right there. We have a VM Depot image for that. You don't have to install the JDK, Tomcat, Alfresco, et cetera, MySQL. Everything is pre-configured in VM Depot. In one of these images, you can literally just grab it, download it, and add it to your Windows Azure instance. The nice thing about that as well is you can create your own images. So if you download this Alfresco image, you make some changes to it, add custom code, whatever you want to do to it, you can actually package that up and submit it back to VM Depot for free and share it with anyone you want to share it with. It's all public. In order to download and implement the VM Depot images, you don't need to have a sign-in, but if you want to actually upload something and share it, you do need to sign in to VM Depot to do that. In order to do that, you set up a deployment script. You can select a region, so I want the West US, and this gives you a little template of the deployment script that you want to use to deploy this out to a Windows Azure VM. So it's pretty easy, pretty cool, and there's a lot of images. If you're thinking about setting something up that's Java-based or actually any open source on Linux, on Azure, this is a good way to start. There we go, thanks. Some of the other things that have been built in, we've got reference API documentation for Java developers. If you go to, actually, if you want to go back to that page. Thanks. On here, yeah. So, I wanted to show you. So the documentation, if you go to Dev Center and Documentation Center, Java. So the Java Dev Center has a lot of reference docs here that you can use. Let's go into the blob service reference docs. It has a lot of information, concepts, and some code here that I'm going to show you actually a little bit in more detail later. But you've got a lot of information here that you can use for getting started with the Java SDK that we have available for developers. We also have articles and updates out there in the Documentation Center. There's a Hello World app that lets you get started with the Eclipse plugin, for example, and shows you how to build a Tomcat solution using Windows Azure, test it in Eclipse, and deploy it to Windows Azure. Also, azure.github.com is a great resource as well. There's some Java code as well as a ton of open source code out there. We also have msopentech.github.com that has some Java code. And one thing I should mention is the Eclipse plugin that I'm going to show you in a little bit is available on GitHub, and you can take it, fork it, do whatever you like with it as well. So the Eclipse plugin, as I mentioned, you can use And we also have the Zulu OpenJDK that we've added to the WebPI installer. How many people here are familiar with the WebPI installer? A few. Okay. So the WebPI installer is a tool that you can download for free from Microsoft and allows you to set up on your local machine or on a server pre-configured images on Windows. We've actually set up the Zulu version, and you can do that. And I'll show you a demo of that. So here's the WebPI installer. If you just search for Web Platform Installer, and you can download it. Like I say, it's free. It's a tiny download. If you go to Applications, and then just type Zulu, and there it is. And you can just add it to that. You can go ahead then, go back to pick any of these other ones, Joomla, et cetera, et cetera. You can pick all these items, and you can upload them. It'll actually configure them and set them up on your machine or on your Windows server as well. If you're a developer, your IT pro colleagues probably already use this and haven't told you about it. So it's kind of a cool little tool that you can use for that. The other thing I want to show you is our Eclipse plugin. So I've talked a lot about this. So I mentioned that we have an SDK for Java that you can download as well from the Documentation Center. When you get Eclipse and add this plugin, there's instructions on the Documentation Center as well about how to do that. But basically, you just go into the add-ons for Eclipse, and you go to dl.msopentech.com, and it'll automatically load the Eclipse plugin and the SDK for you. And what you get when you do that is a few extra buttons along the top here. And what these buttons do is allow you to test things locally on your local machine in Eclipse, and also deploy them to Windows Azure. So I'm going to show you the testing part here today. So what I've done here is I've created a little Hello World app. It's just a basic web deployment app in Eclipse. And I can go up here once I've set up this app. And let me see here. Hello to build. Let me just save that. Got a lot of stuff running here. Ba, 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 ba. Got too many things running here on this Eclipse client. There we go. Okay, so hello to build is there. So now what I've got, it's just basically index.jsp that's in a web deployment application. And once I've got that, I can click on this button. For those of you at the back, that says New Windows Azure Deployment Project. When I fire that up, I can say build, name the project, build 2014. Sorry. you can use your default location, which is going to be the same location you have for everything else over here in your Package Explorer. Next, these are some of the cool things that you've got. So I'm going to use my local JDK, and the JDK is picked up from your Java home on your local machine. Other options you have, you can deploy the local JDK when you're actually going to deploy into test. So what we do is we're actually deploying from your local machine into a test environment, emulation environment. It's going to deploy it into a Tomcat instance on your local machine and or, when you're ready, deploy it out to Windows Azure as well. You can deploy a third-party JDK package, and right now we have three versions of the OpenJDK that you can do that with. There is a way in the back end of this to configure your own JDK as well. And that's documented on the Documentation Center. But you can pick from a drop-down if you want. Or you can deploy from custom download. What's cool about this is you can actually set up a URL somewhere else, could be anywhere on the web, which, when you deploy this, is going to deploy the package, your WAR files, any other related dependencies that you have, on the way out to Windows Azure. And it's also going to go out to this URL and grab the JDK. So why do you want to do that? It makes the deployment package that you're creating much smaller. So if you have a lot of people in your organization deploying this package that you're building, it makes it much smaller and much easier if you have it in a local instance, maybe inside your enterprise or out on the web. It allows you to make it more portable, basically. You can also put it in a storage account. So you can create a blob storage account on Windows Azure. You can put that in there and just specify the storage account to go and grab the JDK from. So once again, lots of options for deploying, and it just gives you a default deploy route. You can change that if you want. The other thing is your web app server. So in this case, I'm going to use Tomcat. I'm going to use it on my local machine. I have a Tomcat set up in C Tomcat. And if I pick Apache Tomcat, there we go. You'll notice that it automatically recognizes as Apache Tomcat 7. We also have several other Tomcat versions that you can play with. Tomcat 6.7, some versions of GlassFish, JBoss, and Jetty. Those are the default versions. Once again, you can actually choose your own and set it up behind the scenes as well. And you can also, much like with the JDK, actually exactly like with the JDK, you can deploy from a custom download or from a storage account as well. So that, you know, 5 megabyte, 10 megabyte, 300 megabyte web app server could be somewhere else. It doesn't have to be deployed with a big deployment package in your application. So in this case, we're going to deploy from that. Okay. What did I do wrong? Oh, here. There. Now I've got the next button. Okay. Applications. So here is where you can add other dependencies, other files that you want to build into your application. There's a question there? Not as yet, but right now it just supports those. But you can actually configure WebLogic, and I can show you where after a little bit later. But you can actually set that up as a custom link in the back end of the application. Right now in the UI it doesn't do it, but you can do it through the changing of the properties. No, not at this time. We don't have a deal with IBM WebSphere at this time. So it won't, if you want to add IBM WebSphere, I can show you a blog post that gives you the details of how to actually customize any web app server you want. But we don't have a deal with IBM to actually put that in here yet. So here's where you'd set your dependencies. The next in the link, so this is just, you know, step-by-step wizard type UI. So do you want to enable sticky sessions? All you have to do is click that, and it will enable sticky sessions. What that is, session persistence. So if you have multi-node applications, the user will continue to go back to the node that they first went to maintain persistence. Otherwise, you might lose persistence if you go to another node.
It's been a little while since I checked, but when I did last check, I was pretty sure that sticky sessions in Java, the way it's supported here, was actually easier to use and, you know, faster setup than it is to actually do something in .NET Pass on Azure. So, like, the fact that the sticky sessions are there, it really is really cool because it's so much easier than trying to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. And then we've got caching, which is Memcached compatible caching that you can use for storage and retrieval of data. And we've got remote debugging. So Eclipse supports remote debugging. If you click this instance, it allows you to do remote debugging on your Azure instance when you've deployed it to Windows Azure. It doesn't work in the local test emulator for obvious reasons, but it does work as a remote debugger in Windows Azure if you need it to. Then all you do is just click finish. And there's a noisy session behind us.
Yeah, I think they're having more fun than we are.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a build 2014 application there. Now, when I click on it, you see when I clicked on My Hello World, you see that gray there. When I click on build 2014, this, for those in the back again, it says running Windows Azure Emulator, and it allows me to fire up the emulator eventually. Yep, there we go. So down here, right now, it's actually firing up several things, copying 1,240 files to a deployment package that's built. 1,240 files just for this. We've come a long way as Java developers. So that'll fire up. So what we're doing now is we're starting the storage emulator. Absolutely, none necessary for this application, but it starts for every demo, or for every application. And then it starts the Tomcat server. So you can see the Tomcat server firing up. I trust my local Tomcat server, so I'll allow it access. And the server is now started up. So the next thing that fires up is this emulator, and we know that our worker role is running over here. And once we got that going, we can go over here to, let's see, Tomcat. It says it can't be displayed, and that's because we need to refresh it. And localhost is running Tomcat. So you can actually run Tomcat, and then you can run the application. Running out of time here, but you can actually run the application itself, and all it's going to say is welcome to build as well. So this is your local emulator, and the application would be running in this as well. Let me see here. It's the name of the WAR file is what you want to use. Okay. World. Oh, okay. It's not working. All right. But that is the name of the WAR file. Yeah, never mind. the Tomcat is working anyway. So that's the good news there. Not sure why my app isn't working, but let's see. Eh. What's that? I think it is Hello World, but I think it is my Hello World, but I'll try it. Good suggestion. Let's give this a try. No, doesn't like that either. Huh. Oh yeah, no, it says Hello from Windows Azure. Okay, thank you.
I think it worked.
Jeez. Okay, sorry about that, guys. Thank you for the help. Tech support right here. So that worked. So that's basically all you have to do. And obviously, if there was an actual application running, it could use storage emulation and compute emulation to actually run through your application. You could try different scenarios. And once you're ready for it, you literally push this button here to deploy this out. Where is it now? Build the cloud package for Windows Azure, we already did. This one here, published to Windows Azure Cloud, once I stop the emulator. Would allow you to actually publish that using some credentials that you download from your Windows Azure dashboard and publish that to the web. There's also support, as I mentioned, for SSL offloading and a few other things. You can go through properties to see that. So if I go in here to the build 2014, I right click, go to properties, down here in Windows Azure, there is remote access. There's also, you can set up build for testing an emulator, or deployment to cloud, target OS. You've got several Windows Server 2012, Windows Server 2008. And in the roles here, your worker role, worker role, edit. So here you can set your virtual machine size for each one of these. And here's your SSL offloading as well. Enable SSL offloading. It's going to warn you, set port 443 instead of 8080 and enable you to use SSL. And as I mentioned before, there are actually facilities for generating your own cell sign certificates as well. And all of that is, as I mentioned as well, open source on GitHub. So you can download this and play around with it and make some custom changes if you need to. Kind of cool stuff.
Great. So that kind of wraps up the IaaS in the past, and that leaves us with one other area to talk about, and that is the services. Now, to remind you, the services, this isn't something where you another way of hosting Java in Microsoft Azure. Instead, what it is a bunch of pre-built capabilities and services that are part of Azure that you can take advantage of, again, whether it's from your Java running in Azure or Java running on-premise on your own laptop, wherever you might want to do. We'll start talking about some of these services in just a second. The way you get access to these services is that you download the Java SDK for Azure. and it's available on our website, and it works for Windows, Mac, and Linux. You know, works everywhere just like you'd expect out of something running Java. And once you get that, you get access to a bunch of different building blocks that are part of Azure. And we'll talk to you about a little bit about some of these. Want to talk about cache?
Yeah, so cache, as I mentioned, we've got Memcached, compatible, low latency cache. It's got high availability support, so you can use it on multiple instances of the back end. You can dynamically grow and shrink the cache size depending on your needs at any particular time. Do you have anything else to add there?
No, that's good.
Okay.
So identity, how many people work somewhere that uses Active Directory? Yeah, I think that's pretty much most people. So Active Directory is really very popular, and what better way to secure, you know, your web assets than using Active Directory? Well, you can plug into Active Directory and Azure Active Directory using the Java SDK, and that means you can plug into your enterprise identity as well. That means you can do single sign-in with your apps, and you can access the REST API, the Graph REST API for Active Directory, so you can get information about the users, what they're allowed to do, all sorts of really great stuff.
And for Java specifically, we call ACS filtering, allowing you to use authentication with certificates to authenticate against AD as well.
Absolutely.
Service bus, so we have service bus capabilities with queuing and relay, and you can easily build hybrid apps that allow you to work with local and web applications with loosely coupled.
So this is a really great way to combine what you have in the cloud and what you have on-premise with, you know, seamlessly using these relays, so you don't have to pick one or the other. You can actually connect the two with very little trouble. SQL database, so people are probably familiar with SQL database. It's relational data storage. In Microsoft Azure, you know, SQL databases are a first-class citizen. So what that means is that it's not some database hidden behind the scenes. This is a full SQL database. And you can connect to it from your Java applications. You can also connect to it from anything else you might be running, whether it's a PHP website or a .NET website or cloud service or a VM or anything else you might have. You can connect to it and use it. And this also, it's a fully managed, and it includes SQL reporting or the SQL reporting support.
So blob storage as well. We have highly available. How many people have worked with blob storage before? Okay, about half of you. Yeah, so it's a file system management. So you can implement something like a Dropbox or something with file sharing, and it could be private or public. You can use continuous modular replication across data centers or within the same data center. There is backups of this, so it's very solid, very stable file sharing and file storage capability.
And as he was talking about the public and private, what's really great about this is that if you just want to be able to share the URL to your blob, you can make a container public and just give out a URL. What you can also do is make it private, and in that situation, what you can do is from your Java application or from whatever backend you want, you can basically create a secure access signature, which is a URL, and you can say, this URL can access this blob for this long. And then you can give that URL out to a calling application or wherever you need, and then that URL is only valid for so long. So let's say I want to share a file with you, but I want to make sure you only have access to it for so long. It's a great way to do that.
So just for those of you, the half of you who don't know about blobs, I'm going to give a real quick overview here. So blob storage concepts, basically there's an account, which is, like the basic, think of it as a hard drive. So the basic hard drive would be the account, that would be /. The container is a directory, some could be private, some could be public. Some are secure, some are not. Then you have your blob storage, which is the actual files that you're storing in the container. And then you have pages and blocks. Pages and blocks are optimized. Pages are optimized for read, and blocks are optimized for read-write, as far as I know. I think that's what it is. So you've got your account. You can name the account whatever you like. The container itself, once again, is part of that. You specify whether it's going to be public or private at that level, and at the container level, sorry. The blob storage itself is for each file. That's the name of the blob that you've actually got, and that's .jpg for JPEG files, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this is the Java code for doing, for basically accessing a blob and writing, just basically listing off all of the items in a blob. So here's how we start. You import these two packages, and then you create a class, which is a string, and it's a storage connection string, points to the account, your account name, and everything you get from the dashboard. Your storage account key is provided from the dashboard as well. And then you define your container with another class, so blob client get container reference. If the container doesn't exist, you can say container create if not exist, so you don't have an error message. You can actually just create a container and then return a blank list of items in there. So then you have a for. The for just lists the blob items, lists the blobs, and print them out to the local, whatever the output is set to at that moment. And it's going to give you a URI as a result of each one of these iterations as you go through the for.
So I think the last service we'll talk about that's part of the software service is not actually included in the SDK that everything else would, or that the earlier SDK would give you access to. And that's something called notification hubs. Now, how many people in here have done any sort of mobile development? A fair amount. Chances are good, though, that you all have a phone and you've used mobile apps. And chances are also good that you've all received push notifications. One of the really cool features of Windows or Microsoft Azure is something called notification hubs. And what notification hubs allow you to do is provide a super scalable way to deliver push notifications down to mobile applications. And that includes Windows Store, Windows Phone, iOS, and Android. Now, while each of those client platforms has an SDK so you can talk to your hub and say, hey, I want to get push notifications, there's also a beta Java SDK that's still kind of in development, but you can use it right now, that you can use to both manage device registrations and trigger push notifications down to your applications. So if you're building an application that has, you know, in Java, and you want that application to be able to push stuff down to your mobile applications, this is a great way to do that. So got a few links here that were kind of provided resources of stuff we talked about earlier. We'll also provide the slides at some point soon, so you can, I think after this, so you can get access to all these. But you know, really great stuff here. At the bottom, there's a tutorial, which is a lot of what Brian showed you with that Hello World stuff. So it'll take you through using the Eclipse SDK and actually getting a Java app into Microsoft Azure.
One thing I should mention, the Eclipse plugin, we're working on changing the name from Windows Azure to, it's just going to be called the Azure Toolkit for Eclipse. So in the future, if you need to search for it and you can't find it through this link, it's probably because we changed it. And it should resolve, though, but just in case.
All right. And then there's also some more stuff around the Oracle stuff, including, you know, the kind of the Oracle landing page, how to use the Oracle images, and then also kind of the first case study of a company that's currently using Oracle on Azure, and you can see kind of what they did and what their experience was like.
If you are using Oracle on Azure, I'd like to hear from you. We are doing an early adopters program called Oracle Advisors that helps people with early adoptions of Oracle on Windows Azure.
Now, we are pretty much out of time, and we'll give you a second and a minute to answer or to ask any questions. I do want to put up our contact information so you can always reach out to us. Now, there is something else going on at Build related to Java that I can't, unfortunately, talk about yet, but you'll maybe see it tomorrow and hear more about it then, possibly. That's all I can say. As you may have noticed earlier when I said there was stuff in the portal that we couldn't talk about, that's already there. There may be stuff that's already there that you could find, but I can't tell you where to look. So we'd love to answer any questions now. One thing before we do that, though, please do provide your feedback. It's really awesome that we were able to get a Java session up at Build. You know, it's because people are actually interested in it that we are. You know, the more feedback and the more, you know, people that say they want to hear more about Java on Azure, the more deeper we'll be able to go and the more awesome stuff we can show you. So first of all, thank you everybody for coming, and then we'd love to answer any questions you've got.
Thanks. One thing I wanted to mention, if I may, I don't know if we can change this.
Sure.
So I was going to say if we can, so come by the MS Open Tech booth. We've got this cool demo going, which is it's working with Kinect and OpenGL and a few other technologies, Angle, a couple of other things to do some cool effects on screen with a Kinect.
Great.
And it's all open source code that you can go and grab now. If you have a Kinect, you can actually replicate this at home if you ever wanted to, or at the office. So thanks.
Yeah. All right. So thanks again for coming, everyone. Appreciate it.
Thank you.